what's going to happen. We can have some ideas, maybe, sometimes, sometimes not. And sometimes it's a wonderful, pleasant adventure, and sometimes it's not so much fun. So we're in the part of retreat called transition. And it's an important time. A great deal, if not all of our lives, are actually transitioning. But this is a very clear transition that we can be aware of the process. And we're coming from an environment that is extremely protected. And we're going into an environment that's extremely not protected. And if this is your first retreat, or even not, sometimes we don't realize how amazingly open we are. You know, we don't feel that different. We feel different, but you know, there's still all this stuff going on. You know, we just think it's the same. We're the same, and we're not. None of us. We're not the same person that came to the retreat when we started, and we're a great deal more sensitive. And there's a part of my mind when I go back, probably this is, you know, around 200 retreats now, that is a little surprised that the rest of the world is like it was. It's like, huh? Don't they know that an amazing thing has happened and shifted? And they don't. And that abrasiveness that you may have run up against that closed you down in the first place can still be out there. Usually it is. So this is just a little preparation. If you run into some very startling things, there's nothing wrong with you. You haven't done it wrong. It's like it's a chance to actually to feel. We live in a world that's so overstimulated. You know, is there some part of this I'd like to let go of? Another thing that I wanted to share with you is I went to sleepaway camp when I was about 10 or 11. When I went to the camp, I noticed that I wanted to be home. And then I went back home the next year and I noticed I wanted to be at camp. And then, oh, but home's really the right place? No, camp's really the right place. So watch your mind with this, and particularly important with comparing mind. We will come up and we'll say, you know, this is better, and notice on retreat, did you ever really think this was enough and I'd like to go home now, you know, I'm done? And you will think that maybe. When you go home. So it's really important to find a right balance for yourself in your lives and to notice what fits still and what doesn't fit. Some relationships may not fit anymore. Some may fit better. We don't know. But to really examine, you know, who am I now? Does my same environment fit or not? Do you want to add to that?
We talked a lot about metta on this retreat. Mm-hmm. And one of the characteristics of metta, which is really helpful, is that it opens and we can begin to hopefully feel that tenderness towards ourselves. But the metta is part of a four-part package. And metta is one, compassion is another, joy is a third, and equanimity is the fourth. And we don't usually do equanimity on retreats, but equanimity is hopefully really the result of being able to open up and feel it all, yeah? So the openness that Terry's speaking about, you know, we can learn to navigate it more when we ground ourselves and when we feel very strongly connected to our body. That's a really helpful way of developing equanimity. So rather than leaning in towards the tenderness, openness, we can lean in towards the body, the ground, our anchors to the earth. And that can help give some sense. You know, some of you are in the Qigong exercises, and the weaving, that weaving is actually very protective. And so it's a really helpful thing to do before you leave here, is to do that weaving. Connect with your energetic roots and weave your energy field around you. It will be an energetic buffer so that you're not having to navigate it all on an emotional level. And but the tenderness and the openness is often unrecognizable. One doesn't have an accurate measure of how open one is in this context, because this feels normal to us now. Yeah.
There also can be a tendency to kind of measure your progress if you have that kind of mind. And certainly it's not a good time to measure it while you're in it. But I think the Dalai Lama was one that said, if you want to evaluate the practice and how it affects you, do it every 10 years. Because it's an amazing process that's totally, totally transformational, but we don't see it necessarily during. Look back. How had I responded to this same situation 4 or 5 years ago? So we can often get to a happiness that actually surpasses other happinesses on retreat. And daily life is really different. It's a whole different game. And people often ask me when they leave retreat, how can I continue? How can I keep this in moving through my life? And that takes practice. And it takes practice in how to do it for yourself, how your life is set up that doesn't serve this. And it also takes meditation practice. And we'll talk in a little bit about opportunities for practice in different areas. But as far as how much you should sit, that has to fit with you. And I tell people, it depends on how happy you want to be. It's your choice, really. And the conditions outside are not the same as the conditions in here. But it still makes a huge difference in the quality of your life. And if it's not something that you have ordinarily in your life, it's going to take, it took me, I think, 10 years before I actually had a consistent daily practice. So for a lot of, I'm a slow learner. So for some of you, hopefully it won't take that long. I don't ever hear anyone say that they've regretted it. But maybe I just don't hear those people. So, you know, judge for yourself and find out for yourself. Don't take, you know, our word for any of this. See if it's true for you. And what does lead you in the direction of your own sense of well-being? You know, maybe it's painting, maybe it's singing. I don't know. So it's different. But actually, to help feel out something deeper, you need to go in quiet. That's my experience. To feel out what's right for you. So as a householder, it's important to develop balance in our lives. And usually the number one thing that people have is overdoing and overstress. And it's so easy to match energy out there. It's like we're open, we're going to match energy. So it's really helpful to protect your space however that works for you. And closing the door and going to sit is the best way I know. Also, bringing this practice into daily life for some people, it really doesn't work for them to have much sitting time at all. And whether it does or whether it doesn't, the practice in daily life can shift to a practice of sila, of really working the precepts and practicing kindness and generosity in the world. It's another thing that if you explore it on your own, chances are you're going to find that it makes you happier. It's just, it's not a should, it's not I have to do this, but if you need to, maybe get some discipline to do it a little while so you can find out what the results are, and you practice it for 3 months or so, you know, once a week doing something, feeling, is this serving me or not? Don't let me or anyone lay a trip on you, find out for yourself. But being kind to people, giving. You don't have to give your finances. Give your heart to people. You know, tell the person next to you, your hair is lovely, Ellen. It is. Don't make anything up, but don't withhold something like that. It's a generous thing to speak it out. So, and as you speak it out, you'll start to see things that are lovely in your environment and with other people. Because that's the thing you bring your attention to. So that's what your mind will be drawn to. And we're pretty conditioned to have our mind drawn to what's wrong and what's bad. It's actually in our DNA. So just we'll do the precepts. We'll say the precepts in English. Yeah, let's just see if we can talk about them in terms of daily life first. So the first precept is not killing, and usually that's not an issue for a lot of the people who come here. You know, it might be for somebody, but it's not, it's bigger than not killing. It's also not taking life, and we have these dilemmas, you know, what do we do with termites? You know, and they come up, and there are questions, and the answer is we take them in, we reflect on it, we feel what the right thing is to do, and then we do whatever we do. Okay? So, but it's a guideline. It causes us to stop if we see a critter running across the floor. It's a wake up. It's like, okay, what do I do? Is this something I can hold with peace in my heart, in my space, or not? So it's just to stop and feel where your edge is. And non-killing also really means not killing our own life force, our own spirit, our own hearts. And that's something that we will have to play with too. Find out when we go against ourselves. So we don't kill, we don't actually kill it, but we muddy the waters and we cover it up quite a bit. Still there. Not taking what's not offered. There's many, many, many ways of doing that. Pulling on somebody when they don't really want to be there. You know, getting somebody's attention and sort of grabbing them with your words. Or, you know, I mean, that doesn't mean if you need something not to ask for it, if you want to say something, to not put yourself out. But don't take it if it's not given. A right sexuality. Such a powerful force, as Amma talked about. It means honoring sexuality as a powerful force in us and in other people. And how do we deal with it? We have to deal with it. Here we are. So how do we deal with it appropriately in a way that leads to more love and more happiness and not a way that can harm someone? So it might be that it harms someone, we don't know it. But it's to be more sensitive in that area and find out, you know, is it helpful for me to be this way or not? To me and to the world. And right speech is probably the trickiest one. But I'll jump over that and come back to it. Intoxicants that cloud the mind is not a trip. It's not like, oh, should or shouldn't except for some people really need to keep sober. But it's something to question, and it's hard, you can't question it in the middle of it, you know. Is this serving me? And a lot of teachers now include junk television. I mean, you know, there's good shows, and there's shows that you're just sitting there in front of. So, I mean, in all kinds of input, how do we cloud our mind? It could be, and for every person it's going to be different. It could be hanging out with people that just, you know, you tried and you tried and tried for 10 years and it just doesn't serve me. Hanging out with wise people is a very, very useful thing to do. It's part of our lives. Doesn't mean don't take drugs. If you had a doctor prescribe something that's useful for you, that's helpful for you, you evaluate for yourself, your doctor, your healthcare practitioner, and see if it works for you, and try it if you feel like it's right. Okay, write speech. So there are guidelines that we have, and it's helpful to not try to take on everything at once. Because a lot of us grew up with verbally abusive environments. And so we've taken on this. You know, it's like not a pleasant thing to find out that you've taken on. And, you know, I remember hearing my mother come out of my own mouth and being in horror. It's like, oh, my God, this is not what I wanted, you know. And of course, I was doing it all my life. But, you know, it just to have that and to realize that it's happening may be the first step, if that's what comes up. And it comes up to the people that we love the most dearly. We give them our blast or whatever often. You know, we take our sweetness into the world. So this is a real important piece. And ourselves. Right? It's what we project onto other people. So, again, play with your edge. You know, speech is so important because it's a way of relating, it's a way of connecting, it's a way of coming closer to someone else, it's a way of intimacy, and we can't throw it out in our lives. We don't want to throw it out in our lives. But then there's another way. I know that when I was a girl, there was this kind of a bonding that would happen that I loved, and we'd say, did you hear about so-and-so? Did you see what she was wearing? You know, oh my God, that skirt, oh! and we could kind of share like that. So if you have a little piece of that way of sharing, maybe you could experiment with finding another way to connect, another way to bond. It's alienating. When you see that girl again, there's a wall that comes up for you and for her now. And, you know, she's actually a person too. And it closes us off in our own minds, you know. We just get solid and fixed and rigid, and we lose so much of the world. So there's so much of that that happens inside, innerly. Good place to stop it is when you go out with it. And it actually begins to shift our own inner self-talk to more kindness when we speak with more kindness outside. Another thing that you can play with is the tone of aggression. And getting things done often for me brings on, it's a subtle, but I can feel it, an aggressive inner stuff. It's almost like, okay, now get out of my way because I've got to get from here to there. And it's a shutdown. And so if your tone of voice when you're running an errand is, okay, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. Play it like a song in your head. Go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It actually, it gets that energy going anyway. It makes you aware of when you start to say it. It's like, and then you'll hear that in your head. Get the laundry, do this, you know. Go stop by the cleaners, pick up this. Don't forget that. So it's like just shift it. All you have to do is shift it one notch. You know, like someone gave a great analogy. It's like when you're setting the sails to go this way, one little degree makes a tremendous amount of difference in the long run to where you end up. So just a tiny little bit. You set the intention, step one. Step number two is you screw up. That's step two. That's not a mistake. And step three is you reset intention. Reconnect with yourself and set the intention again.
I just want to add one more thing. You know, just being with Thich Nhat Hanh and his community, he's completely eliminated the word precept. And he uses the word mindfulness practices. And, you know, there's something about that which I actually really love, because, you know, the precepts are mindfulness practices. They're not commandments. They're not rules. They're mindfulness practices.
That's great. Yeah, that's a hard word.
We do weird things with that, the sense of something that's imposed on us, or any sense of somehow being shamed by not living up to an expectation that's been set.
Yeah. So, honor your own edge and play there. So, we'll take the precepts together. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.